Blog Talk Radio.
Great joy and good afternoon, my friend. The Nepalese meditation bowl is chiming, centering your mind and delight on The Art of the CEO, the show that brings you the wisest counsel and most fascinating people in the business community from all around our terrestrial orb. I am Bart Jackson, your Hieronymus Bosch of business. And you know it, my friend, the difference between human energy and organized human energy is a key factor in effective success or muddling failure of any enterprise. And that is the talent that Miss Lisa Orloff brings to the face of disaster. Immediately following the September 11th, 2001 devastation in Manhattan, Lisa stepped in amidst the compassionate chaos, and she displayed that desperately needed ability to organize all the volunteers and equipment into an effective accomplishing force. So she helped save lives and rebuild. In fact, she handled these efforts so ably that she turned her back on a thriving fashion career and launched the World Cares Center, which trains and dispatches volunteers standing at the ready all around the globe. And in fact, Lisa, for her founding operations of the World Cares Center, was honored on September 19th with the Prometheus Social Enterprise Award. So whether you're looking for a role model or some techniques for focusing your energies on any team in business, or you're just intrigued in the tales of one of the highest-achieving social entrepreneur business leaders around, pull up your chair and join us in this feast of wisdom, all carefully cuisined to make your career thrive and your ventures flourish. Lisa, I'm so glad that you've set the cares of the world aside for a moment and can join us you're in the Art of the CEO radio show.
Thank you, Bart. That's quite an introduction.
Well, it's all true and amazing. As a matter of fact, one of the things I love about just hearing you talk and the whole spirit at World Care Center is that you believe in the human spirit and the average person's ability to come forth and efficiently perform recovery. So I guess my question is, and I can almost just hear this in my head, what do you say to those skeptical firefighters and other professional rescue recovery folks who say the volunteers get in the way?
It's interesting. So, you know, I certainly don't want to throw the firefighters under the bus. I don't want to throw the firefighters under the bus, They are very community-minded, and I think that they understand how people who are not in uniform can help. And
Good.
It's also very personality and experience-driven. So if someone has never worked efficiently or effectively with community volunteers, they don't understand what they have to offer. And what was very, very interesting to me was that those that were most efficient and effective and worked well and were able to provide a resource were considered as professional volunteers. They people would just keep on saying, and what organization do you belong with? And which agency? And you know, it took a lot to say, you know, we're community volunteers. You know, we belong to the community. We belong to this grassroots group. We're not an agency that traditionally responds to disaster, but we're here in the community and we work with the community every day, and we're merely applying our skills as leaders every day to this disaster. So you may need to guide us a little bit on what the protocols are, but in most cases, I guarantee you we're an asset.
That's wonderful. It's early in the show, but I thank you, folks. I'd like you to just remember that Lisa has given a quill pen moment that is, shall we say, a timeless truth of business and of life, in that if you, A, listen, and B, step forth with a caring and professional attitude, people will respond. And I'm reminded of that great line of Xenophon, says, "I'm willing to follow or to lead." And this is what your people are. So dip your pen in the inkwell, write that down, and thank you very much, Lisa. Actually, you know, much of what you said is something that was exemplified in your own history. You're a New Yorker. You love New York, and when 9/11 hit Manhattan, like millions of people, you felt, you know, great urge to help the city, and it was all a lot of urge to give, and things were chaotic naturally. Could you just share one instance? I heard you talk about. Share with us your experience of when you, as a caring New Yorker, went to the Javits Center to volunteer.
Sure. So, you know, like probably everybody listening to the show, we were watching everything unfold on TV. And I had tried to go to various locations and volunteer, but was bounced around. And I ended up at the Jacob Javits Center. And at that time, Manhattan South, NYPD Manhattan South, had set up their mobile command unit. And things were just beginning to be organized. And in the short distance, there was a card table set up with two volunteers sitting behind it, and they had flyers, and they were registering people. And there was literally a line wrapped around the Jacob Javits Center, which is, if you know the Javits Center, it's a huge building. Right? How many blocks does that encompass?
Oh,
and so, you know, we had
3 or 4, yeah.
Yeah, so three or four city blocks in a square, and people were wrapped around the Javits Center waiting to sign their name up. And yet there were flyers, instructional flyers, of where people could go and how people could help. And I'm like, well, why should people wait? Let's send out that information, and you know, if they were able to help and if they fit the description, they could go immediately, or they could just not have to wait in line. So I walked up to the table and I said, "How can I help you guys? You know, there are so many people waiting. You know, what can I do?" And they turned to me and they go, "No, we don't need anything. We got it under control." And I said, "This is a little bit. I'm not seeing what you're seeing. I'm seeing you two people, and I'm seeing thousands of people waiting. You know, maybe I can just take these flyers and walk around the block and hand them out," which is what I did. And that led into several other opportunities for me to help out, from helping the Salvation Army with their feeding truck, to eventually being asked by the Jacob Javits leadership to manage the donated supplies that were coming into the Javits Center, and making sure that they got to where they needed to go.
Excellent. Wow. Well, you have just stepped right into one of the aspects of the leadership involved, the personal leadership, and my fervent belief that leadership does not come with rank. It comes with the willingness that you've just demonstrated by your own personally, in the willingness to take charge and get things moving. Now, I know that you also went down to Ground Zero. And you did something which I think is just common sense, human, and it shows how things work. You did a favor for one of the supervisory men down there, and that got you a vehicle, and that sort of kicked off World Cares in a spark, right?
Yes, actually, the gentleman, Sergeant Jake Hazor from the Army National Guard, was stationed at the Jacob Javits Center, and he needed a prescription filled, and at the time they had not gotten permission to leave the Javits Center. So I had sent one of my volunteers to retrieve that for him, and he turned to me and he said, "Lisa, I see that you're doing really good work and you know what's happening in the community. Whatever you need, you let me know, and if I can do it, I will do it." And as I warn everybody, don't say those words to me unless you really mean them, because I will take you
like
up on it.
It's like telling a congressman that there's money on the table. My God.
Exactly.
Anyway, go ahead.
So I said, "Well, we actually need a truck and some people that can go down to ground zero and help us deliver these supplies, because we were getting a lot of people coming up and requesting them. A lot of the firefighters needed replacement boots and shovels and things like that.
Yeah,
and they were coming in. And he said, give me an hour. I need to put in a requisition. Give me an hour and meet me in front of the building.
Fabulous.
And that was the beginning of what was an extremely beneficial relationship to both the Army National Guard that was stationed at the Javits and to our efforts as community volunteers. And we knew the community. We knew the roads that were destroyed. We knew the subway systems weren't working. We knew our way around New York City, and we knew a lot of the people that were helping, whereas the Army National Guard wasn't from the area, but they knew how to manage logistics.
Right, right. Boy, and that's one of the keys to managing logistics. You've just given a great business point there, is to know who's there, is to connect with the people who are there, live there, and know the territory. So good for you. If you've just joined us, you are listening to The Art of the CEO, which every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time slithers across the brimful ether of cyberspace, where you may listen and download this and all our episodes by visiting theartoftheceo.com. That's theartoftheceo.com. And as an added avenue, tune in to C-Suite Radio Station. We're proud members of C-Suite. And the members of C-Suite Radio is, well, it's where you're going to get that aha moment for your business to turn it around, and that's all just a listen away. So tune in to our Art of the CEO episodes on C-SuiteRadio.com also. Now, Lisa, let's just look at some of the WCC programs that you've set up. One of the very first things that hit you, and I always love this, you have a beginner's guide to volunteering for disaster relief, a video, and it everyone who's thinking about it should see that. But you also offer the Disaster Volunteerism Academy, both in classroom and online. What is in the course, who needs it, and what am I going to gain from it?
Right. So we have put together three levels of courses, and I like to do things in threes, and I'd like to know if other people do too. It's just about what I can handle and what I think people can focus on. So number one is general awareness. What does the general population need to know? You know, knowledge is power. Disasters take away, disempower people, right? They become frightened.
Right.
They don't know
what
happened. They may not know how to move forward. So the first thing, what does everybody need to know? The second level, of course, is for those that think that they're going to step up and help others in disaster response and become a disaster volunteer. What do they need to know? What does it take to be a volunteer in flood response? Can I lift 30 pounds? Do I have asthma? Maybe I shouldn't volunteer because there may be a lot of mold associated with the cleanup work. Do I want to answer phones and work with survivors? That might be an emotionally taxing job, something that I really didn't expect. So, you know, we really outline what it takes to be a disaster volunteer and some of the things you might come up against. And should you decide to move on, how do you do that? How do you build those skills pre-disaster?
Right.
And then the third is leadership. So we have several courses for disaster managers on how to build resilient teams, how to manage them effectively, and really continue to build resilience within the teams that you're managing.
Well, now, once you've got the people, so you take ordinary working stiffs like me and my wife, who have other jobs, but we also may have some skill, although my wife says I have none whatsoever. Anyway, for people who want to help in repair and recovery, and you'll organize us into the Ready Responders Network. Now, this is sort of, what is the RNN, and it's a hub, and how does it function?
Certainly. So, Bart, we know that you and your wife are certainly not ordinary. And you're actually a perfect example of someone who would excel as a leader, right? You have the social capital and you have the following. So you are a perfect example of someone that we would want to immediately hop on the Ready Responders Network to join this online virtual emergency operations center. and create a group and begin to communicate with other people that are responding. Now, you know, we believe that everybody has the potential to be a ready responder. The Ready Responders Network is a tool where people can connect, share information about what they're doing, reply to a request for help and to volunteer, and to also use a common tool that collects information about what community needs exist down to the individual
right.
person in your community. And so you would hop on, and this data is collected, and it is for your use. So you can use it as your own group, you know, say the Prometheus group, or you can share
right.
it amongst all the other members on the network.
I see. That's it makes such simple, elegant sense. It's wonderful. Give us an example how that worked, and say, well, you were at Hurricane Sandy, and you had the teams there. How did it work? Give me some examples how that functioned at Sandy.
Sure. So it didn't function well during Sandy, and that's why we've improved it to be
Whoops.
To me modest, humble, and honest, which I'm not sure I should do, but
how much you do it in Dorian? Let's try that. Let's move up.
So Superstorm Sandy, you know, really nailed home the need for this function, for this tool. And so what we did was our Ready Responders came to a physical volunteer reception center, and literally hundreds in buses came, and we ran them through registration. Just-in-time training, we gave them personal protective equipment, we paired them in teams, and they deployed out to the community. But a lot of times people would come to us with scraps of paper with critical information. And we said, this is not the way to run an operation. People are going to fall through the cracks. So we have this tool, the Ready Responders Network. We have improved its functionality. And we actually began to use it during Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, where we went and we worked with Universidad Metropolitana. We trained the students to use the tool to go into the community to collect data as to what the survivors' needs were, and then to go back and address those needs. So that's just an example of how the tool is used. It's used in a multitude of ways, and we're constantly, you know, catching up to technology and making sure that this tool is accessible to all of those leaders that can benefit from it.
Right. I see. Just hearing this, it makes me feel that my power is going to be amplified, and I'm sure many many individuals hearing the show right now are feeling that same way. And so, could you give us how, if I do want to step up, I do want to join, and I want to become a Ready Responder, how might I learn more about it and come in to join the WCC crew?
Absolutely. So certainly, our website, www.worldcares.org, or by giving us a call at 212-563-7570. That's 212-563-7570 and www.worldcares.org. You can also poke around the Disaster Volunteerism Academy, and that is the website, www.disastervolunteerism.org. Academy,
which, by the way, is broken down into three nice groups, by the way, as you're saying.
.org, right. And you can, you know, take the training online. As far as getting involved, there's two ways to do so. You can become involved with the World Care Center team, or you can organize your own team, or if you have your own group. A lot of faith-based groups do this. They already have people that they manage, and they'll do drives, or they'll feed the homeless, or they'll do a collection. So they already have a group of people that are proactive.
So my church could gather folks from there.
Absolutely. And that's what we encourage, because what we are encouraging, Bart, and this is super important, we don't want you to look to deploy somewhere else. We want you to look and say, I'm living in my community. I know my community. I know Mrs. Jones is going to need this kind of help. I know Mr. Smith is going to need this kind of help. I know this is my organization, maybe it's a faith-based group, and I know that I have a kitchen where I might feed the underserved. That is my capability, and that is what I'm going to do when a disaster strikes. How do I organize my constituents to force multiply that effort that I do every day when a disaster strikes? How do I use the Ready Responders Network as a tool to coordinate that and to connect with the other resources that do exist when disasters strike?
Excellent. Thank you. Boy, I'm really glad you brought that up. Lisa's going to continue to lay out how World Cares readies the Volunteer Army and how you can be part of it. Right after, you and I, my friend, take this brief sorbet from today's Feast of Wisdom as we offer you a few utensils for today's feast. And first utensil, as I always do, allow me to remind you that the good Lord has gifted you with the title and privileges of Chief Executive Officer of yourself. And since that's really the most important position you'll ever hold in your career, allow me to ask, will this be the day that you reach inside and find the full power of your emotional self and let it juggernaut your energy? Or will you continue to see your emotions as something that must be leashed and held in check to suit somebody else's behavior models? The choice, my friend, is truly yours. Second utensil, I can sense you yearning to steep your lips into a little laughter and take a scriptural recitation from the 102 Best Business Quips book, which I am thumbing through as we speak. I got right here. 50, okay. This is what we're talking about. No one aspires to be a follower, but only the rare few are willing to put in the labor required to lead. So what do you think, Lisa? Does the face of disaster tend to bring out leadership within us, or is it more of a creative skill that can indeed be taught to us all?
I think that it's a combination of both, and that, you know, it takes all kinds, right, Bart? It takes people that are methodical.
That's my excuse, actually, yes.
Takes people that are methodical and detail-oriented and love the minutia to make sure that, you know, you got the vehicle to deliver the goods. Do you have the gas? Do you have the keys? Do you have the directions?
Yeah,
do you know where you're going?
Ooh.
Right? So I think we've joked about this before. This type of detail, in my desire to have that kind of detail, drives my husband crazy. But it's much needed in disaster response, right? You arrive at a site and you don't have the things that you need most. You're not going to the store and picking them up immediately. And then you need that creative person, that empathetic person, that person that's going to connect, that person that can speak on many levels, to volunteers, to survivors, to other leadership, and maybe to people that simply are having a hard time understanding the intent of what you're doing.
Get that message out there.
It takes all kinds of people, and that's what we believe in. And if they are managed and grouped together properly and everyone is following the same script, then you have success. Trouble comes when you're all not on the same page or where you might have that, what we refer to as the lone wolf, who comes in and wants to be a part of something but doesn't really want to be a part of something, right? They want the access,
The group effort is something that something of which we're all capable, but not necessarily instinctive. You know, as an afterthought to that quip, I've always thought that they called him Alexander the Great rather than Alexander the Comfortable, because he stood at the head of his troops, coming up with the strategies, and he was the one taking the biggest risk. At any rate, if you smirked a bit over that quip, we have them literally by the books full. Just visit bartsbooks.com and pick up your copy of the 102 or the 101 Best Business Quips, and you will find, you may just find a little wry wit seeping into your conversation that delights someone that you'd really like like to seductively delight. And as a third utensil, we sumptuously spoon to you the answer to last week's business quotation, that is the name of the individual who said, a bank is a place where they lend you an umbrella in fair weather and ask for it back when it begins to rain. Those words were spoken by none other than the grumpily New England poet who recommended that we take the road less traveled, Mr. Robert Frost. Congratulations to all you winners. And stick with us, because later on in the show, blurting your way, comes another enriching quotation. And if you are among the learned souls who knows the author of that quote, simply scribble that sage's name down as you believe him or her to be and email it right off to info@bartsbooks.com. That's info@bartsbooks.com. And if you are correct, your knowledge will earn you a career-igniting gift freshly disemboweled from the dungeons of Bart's Books bookstore. And the leadership lady who readies volunteers for disasters, Lisa Orloff, is going to explain a little bit more about the organization and prep right after I make this introduction to you of the company by whose good graces we are here today. And that firm is Prometheus Publishing. And this week, the folks at Prometheus would like to announce their Prometheus Social Enterprise Awards video. Now, those of you who were with us on the eve of September 19th at Fairleigh Dickinson University's Hennessy Mansion, we celebrated the top social entrepreneurs from around the globe, and there was an air of excitement unmatched in certainly my experience. And six of the eight honorees came before the audience in what we called the Torchbearer Talks. They're amazing people telling about how to rejuvenate an entire city, how to practically halt the rape and pillage of war, or rescue victims from human trafficking, or whatever their amazing effort. And it was an evening of great hope. And we're inviting you to share these Torchbearer Talks for free as a video. It's a video your children and you will want to see. The Torchbearer Talks are yours free when you write us at info@bartsbooks.com. That's info@bartsbooks.com. Carpe diem, my friend. You are indeed worth it. And now, with utensils in hand, let's return back to the World Care Center president and founder, Ms. Lisa Orloff, who is going to give her some takeaway tales for remedying disasters. Now, Lisa, I think the work is fabulous, but you talk about giving the volunteers what they need. WCC began as a zero-budget, all-volunteer enterprise, and you've grown explosively. I know you're working throughout 30 states, several countries. Give us a picture of the current size of World Care Center breadth and scope.
Well, you know, their size and then their size, Bart. And so we are a small team, about five of us in the office, and we have literally hundreds of volunteers hundreds of partners. So it is the relationships that we have and the network that we sustain that gives us the breadth and scope of our reach. Also, we've spent a lot of time leveraging technology, and that for people of our generation, Bart, can be a bit challenging, I have to say. Our online training.
Help me out here.
Our online training and our ready responders network online are tools that help us expand that reach and allow us to empower people with the knowledge on how to respond, help, and connect with others without having to be there. So we're kind of like the little engine that could with a team of five people in the office. We have a team of trainers that we have affiliated with us, and it's really our partnerships and the volunteers that have volunteered both under the World Care Center umbrella, but with World Care Center as their own entity. And I think that's critically important to reinforce here. We're not coming in and taking over the effort. We're coming in and we're standing behind your organization. You know, if you are a Boys and Girls Club, if you are a group that has been existing in your in your neighborhood and in your community and people trust you, why would I come in and try to overpower that? No, I want to support that. And that's our mission, is really to support local communities, hyper-local communities, and those local leaders that are doing good every day and the constituents that follow them, and to make sure that they are safe and effective in what they do when disasters occur.
I think that's wonderful that you're actually you are amplifying and making more effective natural groups that get together. It's very interesting in our society. We work very hard to, but we've got to break apart the gangs. People who live together are naturally going to form gangs and groups. It's a question of how effective and how good you make them. And I think that this is one of the things that makes you so powerful, is you're putting people in the right direction. What about, now the funding isn't local. Your funding pours in a little bit from everywhere. Where does it come from? And then how might I be able to make a donation and contribute?
I love your optimism, Bart. The fact that you said our funding pours in from everywhere and I love that. Our funding does come in from all around. We have just had our Iron Skillet cook-off, which pairs five firehouse chefs with five top Manhattan chefs. And that's an annual event, so it's coming up every fall. You can make a donation on our website at worldcares.org, and you will see the donate button right there. You can write a check. Or you can become involved in the boots on the ground exercise that's happening April 24th and April 25th. And that's another opportunity to donate and actually become involved.
That. Yes, you can donate to this. I went to the police academies thing many, many years ago as a reporter sort of underground, and I realized how much judgment needs to be sharpened and honed on this thing. Tell us about the boots on the ground training exercise, and what are some of the simulations that you bring about?
Absolutely. So the boots on the ground exercise it's an incredible event. There is a woman, her name is Lois Clark McCoy. She has since passed, and she was really an incredible woman who went in San Diego and said to some of her military friends, "You got all the resources? Let's leverage that and have our citizens be able to run simulations side by side so they can practice like you do." And I had the privilege of participating in some of her events, and of course, because of our affiliation with the military and now veterans coming and returning from their service,
we put together
the boots on the ground exercise and created a real-time disaster simulation where people can come to an open space. We've done it at Randall's Island Park for 2 years. They show up, and it's sparse. It's bare. It's day one. We're setting up tents. We're setting up tables. We are organizing people, and we know that the first thing that needs to happen is to go out there and help people recover from floodwaters. So it's a flood response. And so they are taking just-in-time training on how to muck and gut homes. They're putting on, and the proper term is donning and doffing, if you want to know, donning and doffing, personal protective equipment.
I love those terms. I use them all the time myself, actually.
Okay. So you can don and doff your raincoat.
We'll go after it. We'll scare them.
Okay. So you're donning and doffing personal protective equipment, making sure that that N95 respirator fits and you have the proper equipment. And then you're actually going to a 2x4 with sheetrock built structure that actually our veterans leadership team has come in and built the day before. And you're practicing your muck and gut skills. Tools in hand, you've got your personal protective equipment on, you're sweating, you're having a hard time breathing because that respirator is new to you, and you're trying to apply the skills that you've just learned. And then after all of that happens, you move on to visit the FDNY station where they're going to teach you how to actually physically use a fire extinguisher. Con Edison is there teaching you about gas safety. We've got therapy dogs there. We have a number of different partners that are coming and showing everybody the ecosystem that is active when something bad happens, and who's there and how you connect with them and what they do and how together do we complement each other's expertise.
Oh my gosh, that's great. That's wonderful. I just wonder, I mean, the unabashed idealism is great, but I often wonder, I know these things happen. The World Care team, or one of your World Cares team, arise in a disaster, and I just had this vision of governmental and organizational turf wars. I mean, how did you gain acceptance domestically or abroad? How did you gain it in Haiti? How did you gain it?
Haiti was easy.
Really?
You know, I have. That's... Yeah, I mean, it. Let me put it this way. It was. Not, it was simple, but it wasn't easy. So many challenges. There were many logistical challenges. There was a lot of challenges with the government and understanding the dynamic and how they work very differently than we work here. However, the Haitian people are welcoming. They are smart. They are willing. And they love to be a part of an effort that empowers them to take leadership and respect their position in their own community. And I have to tell you that we would start an activity and people would just want to be a part of it. The key component is my Haitian team lead is a Haitian, and she lost her mother during the Haitian earthquake, which is very sad, and it was a life-changing moment for her, and a very brilliant woman, a leader by nature, a businesswoman by nature.
And she must have made a great difference, I'm sure.
She made an incredible difference, and the thing that is very heartwarming to me is that we worked together for several years. They really took ownership in the program, kept it going, and then when Hurricane Matthew struck Jeremy, which is on the southernmost tip of the island, I got a call from my Haitian team lead. She said, "Lisa, our team is deployed. We've done exactly what you've told us to do. We have an account of the damaged areas, of the hyperlocal communities, who the leaders are, what their needs are, what the most vulnerable populations are. We do need a little support in getting those resources. The first thing that we need is water filters."
She gave it the ABC list, and it went from there. Gosh.
She gave us the ABC list. But it was the ABC list that was vetted, and it was the ABC list that listed the most vulnerable of the populations first. And with that, we were able to bring in the resources that were needed because our partners trusted that the background work that needed to be done to ensure that the things that were needed get into the right hands was done.
Excellent. I thank you for relating it. That's fabulous, and it's good to see that it goes to show that once set on the right path and trained on the right path, it does indeed go forward. Lisa, I have just two quick things. If someone would like you to come speak or talk to their company, as I say, think about being a sponsor of what you're doing. How might they get in touch with you?
They can visit the website, www.worldcares.org, or dare I say, on this program, you can email me directly at LORLOFF@worldcares.org. So, and if you'd like us to come and provide training to your group, that is definitely available.
Okay, and I have just one more question because we're running out of – actually, that's unfair. I've got about 50 more questions. But anyway, we're running out. I have just one more question, and that is, are we – you're centered in the East Coast. Your office in Manhattan, and you do a lot of work on the East Coast. Is North America's East Coast, say from New England down to South Carolina – are we ready for the next disaster? Is our state of readiness fairly good?
Our state of readiness has improved. However,
okay,
we're not 100% there, of course. So we've improved. People have gotten the message. They know that it's not if, it's when. And we're all working as hard as we can and working together. I mean, 18 years ago, it was a challenge to work together and to understand that people, you know, everyone had something to contribute. Now, FEMA is espousing what they refer to as the whole of community approach to disaster response. And that means if you survive a disaster, if you survive a disaster, you are needed to help.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're on
Wonderful.
The same page. Yep.
Oh, and so much of that is due to your effort at coordinating the people from at all levels. And I thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing the stories and, again, giving us a little more hope. Thank you very much, Lisa.
Thank you, Bart.
So, as we round out today's Feast of Wisdom, I am Bart Jackson, your curator of business wisdom, leaving you with today's business quotation. That is, who was it who said, "A committee is a group that keeps minutes and loses hours." This, and as a hint as to the author of it, this American comedian was known as Uncle to his fans in the early days of TV. And he used to ask, when he was asked if evolution works, he would say, "Well, if it does, why do mothers still only have two hands?" Anyway, if you know the author of this quote, write that author's name down as you believe him or her to be and send it right off to info@bartsbooks.com to win a life-igniting gift from the dungeons of Bart's Books bookstore. And to be sure to tune in next week when Mr. Dale Caldwell, director of the Rothman Institute of Innovation and Entrepreneurship, lays out strategies for the duly challenging enterprise of running a family business. Heaven knows every family could use this aid. And as a parting shot, in the words of my wife's husband, of the 104,000 individuals earning master's degrees of business administration this year, only 4,000 will emerge bearing practical knowledge required to perform their first job. The remainder will walk out with a smug confidence that they can lick the world. And that will, in the end, prove just as valuable. And to you gleefully sharing our feast, I hope you've enjoyed the Art of the CEO radio show as much as Lisa and I have enjoyed bringing it to you. And remember that you may download this and all our shows by visiting theartoftheceo.com. And finally to you, who have honored us with your time, may I say, as always, it has been a privilege, and I thank you.